Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Sports Talk in the Icebox. I'm your host, Jeff Safford, here with you this afternoon, coming to you live from Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. We got a great show lined up here for you this afternoon. As always, here on a Wednesday afternoon, here on the campus of Dominican University of California. Another great spring day. We're in April. Hard to believe. And no, that is not a joke. Happy April Fool's Day to everybody out there. And I haven't gotten punked, I guess you could call it. Or I guess that's even kind of an old term now. You know, punked was that television show back in the 2000s or... Yeah, that was... Yeah, I guess through the 2000s. Remember that was Ashton Kutcher was the coach. Was the host of that, and you know, they did, it was kind of like a prank television show. But anyway, yes, it is April Fool's Day, and there won't be any real huge jokes going on here. I mean, maybe a couple slapsticks here and there, but I guess you're just gonna have to listen and find out where the jokes are gonna come. Anyway, got a lot of stuff to talk about. We're going to talk a little bit about the Final Four to start the show. I mean, there's only four teams left in the big dance. You know, it's the fastest 3 weeks in sports, I always say. It seems like it just always goes by so quickly. And it's kind of over before anybody even knows it. Then in our second segment, we're going to talk some NFL news. Some new things coming up with the Aaron Hernandez case and also Greg Hardy. So a couple off-the-field issues, and also Jameis Winston had his pro day yesterday, a couple of reactions coming out on that, and you know, and just general thoughts on the NFL draft. And we're going to talk some NBA basketball in our third segment, talk about the Warriors, how they did last night against the Clippers, and talk about Kevin Durant and what else is new on the Cleveland Cavalier front. It always seems like they come up at least one time in everybody's radio show, even if you're not on ESPN and you love to talk about LeBron James, because it seems like everybody at ESPN just has like a little love affair with LeBron James, but that's a different thing. In our last segment, everybody kind of knows that baseball is right around the corner. Opening day for the Giants is on April 6th, and with baseball coming up, I figured the last segment of the day, do something fun. I'm going to look at some of, you know, it's kind of a trend now in baseball to come up with these crazy food items in the stadium. You know, you see it in football with the horse collar for the Green Bay Packers, or, you know, crazy things. I've looked up a couple of what I think look like the best new ballpark foods around the country. We're coming to you all the way from a couple of things from the Midwest, of course, because they love to eat in the Midwest, and one coming from a minor league team as well. So I'm going to go through four or five what I think are the look like the best new ballpark items for this year, and one item that I think may have missed the cut. So that'll be our last segment. Just kind of fun to put something fun like that in at the end. And that's going to be our show here for this afternoon. Just past 3 o'clock, 3:07 Pacific time here in San Rafael. All right, well, let's get started. We're going to start with the Final Four. We're down to four teams, as I mentioned in the beginning of the show. No huge surprises in the Final Four, I guess you could say. Wisconsin and Kentucky, we're going to see the rematch of those two schools going at it once again. Wisconsin looking very impressive in their Elite Eight victory over the Arizona Wildcats. They were raining threes in the second half of that one. Sam Decker, in particular, he was just unconscious in that game getting to the Final Four. And Arizona, I just don't think, had enough offense to hang with the Badgers. And the Badgers got going from outside. And we've seen that with this team before. They're a very tough team to beat when they really spread you out, because they already have Frank the Tank, Frank Kaminsky down low, who can do a lot of things. But when they're hitting that outside shots, it's very hard to defend the Badgers. They'll be facing against the Kentucky Wildcats. And wow, what a interesting Elite Eight game they had against Notre Dame. Kind of a game for the ages, people are calling it, and came down to the final end. Harrison Twins had to hit some big shots and free throws to eke that one out. Jaren Grant had a desperation three at the buzzer that would have won it. But it was not to be for Notre Dame. And Notre Dame really played their butts off in that game against Kentucky. They went punch for punch with the Wildcats and really led the majority of that game. And you look at it, and that has to be the best team that Kentucky has faced this season. You know, no disrespect to their conference, but the SEC is nothing like what the ACC was, and you saw a battle-tested Notre Dame team go in there and go toe-to-toe with an undefeated Kentucky Wildcat club, and you know, it was impressive to watch, even for how undersized they were, and it just didn't seem to bother them. They just ran their offense, you know, they were hitting shots, I mean, you know, getting to the basket, you know, shooting threes. They were playing good defense. I mean, it was a great effort for Notre Dame. The one thing maybe you could look at they could have done differently is maybe been a little bit more aggressive in those last couple of possessions at the end of the game rather than trying to, you know, kind of go into like that prevent thing where you're just running down the clock. They weren't getting good shots in their last couple of possessions, which led to Kentucky, you know, closing the gap in it and ultimately winning the game. And then you got Michigan State and Duke, the other matchup. You know, Wisconsin and Kentucky are one matchup. And then Michigan State and Duke. Both schools, I mean, that was a great game between Michigan State and Louisville. Michigan State really took control in the second half, really turned that game around in Syracuse to get to the Final Four, and Duke really overmatched Gonzaga. Another year without a Final Four for Gonzaga and Mark Few. It seems kind of, you know, interesting that this keeps happening to Gonzaga. They keep, you know, getting to the Elite Eight or getting to the 16, or, you know, they had a little trouble getting past even the first weekend for a couple of years, but they've never been to a Final Four. It seems a little bit just puzzling to me for as successful that this team has been and for as many good players and good, you know, and special teams that's gone through that school the last couple of years, it just seems crazy that none of the teams have reached the Final Four. And this year was not a exception for Mark Few and the Bulldogs. As they will have to wait another year and have to watch Michigan State and Duke. That's an interesting matchup. Just the coaching matchup alone. I mean, it's Tom Izzo versus Mike Krzyzewski, two great coaches. You know, probably you could say that those are the two best coaches in college basketball today. I mean, obviously, Mike Krzyzewski is the best coach, and you know, you could throw a lot of other guys in there that could be considered the second best, you know, maybe a guy like Jim Boeheim or Roy Williams over at UNC Rick Pitino over at Louisville, even though he doesn't seem like that nice of a guy off the court. He is a very good college basketball coach, but if I had to pick one, I would say Tom Izzo. And he has done a great job with this team this year. They have a lot of similarities. Everybody kind of seems to be comparing them to UConn from last year. You know, they didn't have the greatest year, per se, regular season, but they figured it out in the conference tournament. They made it to the Big Ten final, you know, fought toe-to-toe with Wisconsin. That was a great game in the Big Ten tournament final, and now have kept the role going and have fought their way all the way to the Final Four, and I think it's going to be a great game between these two. I think this game might be the closest game of the two semifinal matchups, just because these two teams do a lot of things right. You know, they have great, both teams are led well, you know, with great guys, you know, coaching them, and they both have players that know how to win. I mean, you see it with the veteran leadership of Michigan State with Trice, their guard, and Valentine and Costello, the big man inside, and, you know, and Dawson, their other big man, has also been playing very well for the Spartans down the stretch. I mean, it's just been kind of a team effort for Michigan State. The one thing that is concerning is their free throw percentage. It's been kind of well documented. It's a little bit over 62 or 63% as a team. It's ranked 330th in the country, where Duke shoots pretty darn well from the foul line. We saw that in the game, the Sweet 16 game they had against Utah. That was like a free throw off, and Duke just kept knocking them down. But I'm not sure if that will really come into play a whole lot. I guess we'll have to see where free throw shooting will come into play with those two teams. But my general thinking on this game, just who I like it, I really like the Spartans. I think that they can get it done, and that sometimes it's the team playing the best basketball at the right time is the team that really can make noise in the tournament. I mean, like I mentioned with UConn, they did it last year, and I think that Michigan State can do it again. I think that they will reach the final of the tournament, the NCAA basketball tournament, and play in the national championship game. And who will they face? I think that's a harder question than a lot of people may think, at least in my opinion. That I think Wisconsin and Kentucky are a lot closer than many may think. They are very different style of teams, but I think that both styles could give teams trouble. Obviously, you know how big and how athletic Kentucky is. You know, their starting five that they've been going with, you know, it's kind of a rotation club where guys will be coming in and out all the time. They have so many talented players on the team, but the starting five players, you know, the Harrison twins with Willie Cauley-Stein and, you know, all those guys, they average over 6'9" per guy. That's unbelievable. I mean, there's a lot of teams in the tournament that hardly have one or two guys that are over 6'9". Cough, Notre Dame, the team that just played, barely had any guys. They're over 6'9". Their average was 6'5" or something like that. So they had almost half a foot on average over every Notre Dame player and about 40 pounds. I mean, that's unbelievable. And Wisconsin, yeah, they have a couple more big guys. I mean, Kaminsky's a 7-footer and Decker's around 6'8", 6'9". But they're not as big as Kentucky. I don't think anybody is. So that, you know, that obviously that physical matchup will pose a problem. But what I was talking about with Wisconsin, where they can pose a problem, is they can really stretch you out. And that's what Notre Dame did to Kentucky a little bit, too, is that they were able to move the ball around well, get some open looks, open jump shots, you know, get some easy one-on-one layup moves to the basket, and that's what it's going to take. And Kaminsky is not just going to be able to get on the block and dominate all night. Kentucky has the guys to stick with him in the paint. He can score in the paint, but he has to threaten with a jump shot. He has to face up and use that pump fake well, like he did against Arizona. He used that pump fake a lot. But for them to respect the pump fake, he also has to hit some shots from the outside. So hit a couple threes. He doesn't have to be Sam Decker and hit six in a row like he did last week. But he's got to hit a few. You know, he's got to, you know, give them reason to guard him out there and stretch the defense out. And we know Kaminsky's going to bring his best effort, but he can't be alone. If the Badgers are going to win, they're going to need productivity from everybody offensively. They're going to need multiple guys in double digits. They're going to need a lot of three-point shooting, you know, and guys are going to have to stay out of foul trouble. I mean, it's going to have to be a full team effort for the Badgers defensively and offensively, I should say, and defensively. You have to protect the rim if you're playing Kentucky. You can't just let them play street ball and one style and let them lob it up to guys and just play above the rim. That's how Kentucky wants to play. You got to force them to shoot some jumpers, take some contested layups, and just make it tough for them. And if Wisconsin can do that, I think that they can compete and they can win this game. But it's going to be very tough, and I am not going to pick the Badgers to win. I think that Kentucky will make it to the Final Four on Monday. So we got Michigan State and Kentucky playing for the championship. And my prediction for who the championship winner will be, drum roll, will be the Kentucky Wildcats. They will complete the undefeated season. I know it's a little bit of a predictable response, but bear with me. I think the Kentucky is just that good this year, and that no team will be able to stop them. They will make it all the way and win the Final Four. We'll see if that prediction was correct next week. We'll talk a little bit about the game on Wednesday's show, but probably not a whole lot, just because it's kind of will be old news by the time we get back to you on Wednesday. All right, well, that's going to just about do it for our Final Four segment. We are up against a break here on Sports Talk in the Icebox. You're listening to radio.dominican.edu. When we come back, we're going to get into some NFL news about the draft and some off-the-field issues. So stay tuned.
To graduate, it takes about the same time to create a dropout. The difference between a child becoming one or the other could be you. Studies prove that reading to a child regularly dramatically improves reading skills. And kids who read well by third grade are four times as likely to graduate. So United Way is calling for 1 million volunteers over the next 3 years. We're asking you to step up, make a pledge, tutor a child who needs help, mentor a kid who needs someone on their side, volunteer to read to children, make a difference. Because when a child advances, we all advance. Entire communities improve. The path to success or failure starts long before graduation day. And the difference between a graduate and a dropout could be you. Be a reader, tutor or mentor, give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Take the pledge. Go to liveunited.org now. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Hey kids, let mom help with your science project.
This new mom wants her kids' science project to thrive. Too bad she hasn't cracked a science book since 1985.
A metathesis reaction?
Compounds, mixtures, and elements. Even this baking soda volcano is too big of an experiment. Whoa. Now she's completely forgotten the periodic table. Now she's burning a hole through the kitchen table.
Burning with science.
But her kids' love for their mom is truly transparent. Proof you don't have to be perfect to be the perfect parent.
Don't tell Dad.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of siblings in foster care will take you just as you are. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Sports Talk in the Icebox. I'm your host, Jeff Safford, here with you on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. We just finished up our Final Four segment for the afternoon, and I went on a limb, just kidding, to pick the Kentucky Wildcats to win the NCAA National Championship. And one bit of news I forgot to get to before we went to break on the NCAA basketball front was that Shaka Smart, the head coach at Virginia Commonwealth University, famously led VCU from the first four to the final four a number of years ago and has really brought that program to national prominence is being targeted by the University of Texas to be their head coach. Now, Shaka Smart has been approached by other schools before and has turned him down, and he signed a big contract with the school. I think it was a year or two years ago. But that doesn't mean he can't leave. And, you know, the question's got to be, will another mid-major coach leave and go to a major program? You know, I think this is a tough one because what Shaka Smart's got going at VCU is a pretty good situation. It's a team that's making it to the tournament now every year, pretty much. And he can get a lot of the players that he wants. You know, so why leave? But also, on the other end, you can have a shot to go to Texas. You know, and Texas is huge. I mean, the amount of money they have in their budget and, you know, just the size of the athletic, you know, department in general, just you can't even compare it to VCU, you know. So in that regard, he would have even more things to his disposal to use. But, you know, you got to look at this. Is this the right move for Shaka Smart? And I really don't think so. Because if he goes to Texas and he doesn't have much success, then where is he going to be? You know, he's going to be a coach that couldn't win at the big program. You know, I think he should be just like Mark Few over at Gonzaga. He could take almost any college basketball job he wanted, but he knows that he can stay at Gonzaga and he can win for as long as he wants, and that's pretty darn good job security. And I think Shaka Smart, he can put into that category as well. He's well respected. He's definitely one of the better coaches in college basketball. He doesn't need to go anywhere. He's happy as a clam with the situation he's got. He's making a lot of money. He's got good players. He's got a Final Four in his resume. That's something Mark Few doesn't have. There's nobody that can say for sure that he can't make it to another one. At least my opinion. I think he could definitely, our VCU team could definitely make it to a Final Four again. All right. So just wanted to get that little plug in there before we moved on to now NFL news. Going to start that off with the Aaron Hernandez trial. Alexander Bradley, who was a friend of Aaron Hernandez at the time of the murder trials, went on the stand today in the trial. Robert Kraft was the owner of the New England Patriots, was recently put on the stand as well at the trial, saying, talking about the conversation that he had with Hernandez at Patriot Place when he asked about the murder initially, and he said he was not involved because he was at a club, a cop-out that was later found to be false. And this case will continue with Alexander Bradley now, and he talked basically about the suspicious behavior that Aaron Hernandez was using or talking about with this whole thing. He will testify for the Florida case, which is a different trial, will not be able to be used in this testimony, but it's another step in the trial, and I will be very interested to see where this goes, where Aaron Hernandez ends up. Will he be convicted? You know, will he end up in jail for murder? I mean, this is crazy. It wasn't all that long ago that he was on an NFL football field and was a very well-respected talent at tight end. Seems like a long time ago now, and will just be another, you know, as the testimonies roll in, this trial will just keep on rolling along, and I guess we'll just see where it goes. And on more news on the off-the-field front, the NFL is going to be able to attain photos from the Greg Hardy trial, the trial where he was convicted. Now, to clarify, he was convicted first, and then Greg Hardy went and appealed the decision. That the decision that was appealed, The decision was appealed in the appeal court, and it was supposed to be sent to a trial with a jury, but the defendant did not show up at the trial, so the case was dismissed. But with these photos, could still hurt Greg Hardy, because they were part of the case that convicted him of these crimes the first time. So this could be, if these photos are incriminating, this could be very bad news for Dallas Cowboys fans, because Roger Goodell and the NFL offices see something that they find to be incriminating from those photos that was used in the first trial, it could definitely affect how many games that he is suspended by, because we know that the NFL has zero tolerance to any kind of domestic violence in any shape or form because of how badly some of their other players have acted. And it shouldn't be about how the players have acted in the past, and just because the NFL is trying to cover their own you-know-what to try to keep the public off of them. But the only worst thing for the NFL that could happen, or I should say, it wouldn't necessarily be all that bad for the NFL. If it would be bad for Greg Hardy if these photos are leaked out to the public, to the press somehow, you know, if TMZ gets their hands in them like they did the Ray Rice video, then this is going to be even worse for Greg Hardy if it's incriminating, because then the public will have a huge effect, just like it had effect on the Ray Rice trial. Everybody saw that Ray Rice video and had an opinion on, oh, you know, he's a wife beater, he's, you know, he should be locked up in jail. I mean, and there's going to be a ton of pressure put on Roger Goodell and his office, and I think that could affect his suspension as well. So just the fact that these pictures are going to kind of rear their ugly head again is really bad news for Greg Hardy and the Dallas Cowboys, because it will surely affect how many games he will miss for the Cowboys. And let's not forget, for Greg Hardy, that the contract he received, even though it looks pretty large, a lot of that money is what you'd call, that is in his contract, the one-year contract for $11 million with $2 million in incentives. So for intents and purposes, let's say it's $13 million. Even though that's not totally official, there's a lot of money in that contract, which some would like to call quote-unquote funny money, money that's not guaranteed to Greg Hardy. And there's, you know, and the Cowboys were smart. They knew that what the situation with this guy was and what the risk was, but they also saw the talent, and they saw a team need. You know, they need a pass rusher. They didn't. After they lost DeMarcus Ware after the 2013 season, they didn't have a great pass rusher on their roster. And Greg Hardy, who is a Pro Bowl talent, fits that bill. And they were, you know, just kind of hoping that he was going to be available for the at some point in the 2015 season. But if he is not, then they can just shrug their shoulders and say, okay, we're not on the hook for anything. We can just forget about it. Well, not really forget. That's not really the better term. But they won't have to pay Greg Hardy $11 million. The number that they will have to be paying will be changed based on how many games he plays in 2015. Now that we've got all that sorted out and we've kind of talked about all of the black cloud issues that seem to be hanging over the NFL, let's maybe lighten it up a little bit and go to the NFL draft. The draft now is less than 1 month away. Seems like the time can't get by fast enough. I'm sure this is the time of year where a lot of guys like me just get tired of seeing the Mark Mayocks and Mel Kiper Juniors of the world on TV. It's just like, okay, I just want to see the draft so I don't have to listen to Mel Kiper and all these other guys, because I don't know why, but some of those guys like Mark Mayock, and I mean, I'm sure they study their stuff a lot, but I just don't enjoy hearing them talk on the air at all. I just I'm just very annoyed by them. But that's a whole nother deal. The NFL draft, obviously a month away. There's a lot of things still to be decided. We don't know where the trades will go in the draft, or, you know, who will move in, who will move out, you know, or what Chip Kelly might be up to up in Philadelphia. Who knows? But we saw Jameis Winston yesterday go out in his pro day and threw what a lot of people saw as well, but he was not fantastic. I don't know how much of an impact that'll have on his draft stock. He missed 10 throws of the 104 throws that he completed, so that seems pretty good. But according to Winston, he said he wanted to show some of his mobility in the pocket, meaning he wanted to show some of his footwork and, you know, show that he could move a little bit, partially because he didn't run a very good 40 time at the combine, only a 4.9. He wanted to show that he is able to make quick decisions in the pocket and has poise and all of those types of things. But it's interesting, I heard a couple of guys talk about him on the radio and said that his footwork didn't really look that great and he needed to clean it up a little bit. So be trying to showcase something may not be the best thing, I guess, for Jameis Winston, but he's still all odds on favorite to be the number one pick in the draft. And Marcus Mariota has kind of been fixed into that number two selection, but that may even be a little bit up in the air with the Tennessee Titans, because the Titans have been in talks. This is kind of an interesting story. I think this kind of rumor started popping up last week, and it just kind of keeps coming up over and over again that the Titans might be interested in trading that number two pick to the Chargers for Phillip Rivers. Now, this is because Phillip Rivers doesn't seem to be all that happy with the situation with the franchise and the possibility to move to Los Angeles, and that Phillip Rivers wouldn't really necessarily be that interested for whatever reason, and so they thinks maybe move to Tennessee. But this is obviously all speculations, you know. Just because Phillip Rivers wouldn't want to go play in L.A. doesn't mean he'd want to go pack up his bags and move to Nashville. You know, that's, you know, so this is completely speculative, but it can show you then how much of a question mark this NFL draft could be. You know, like, what if something big like that happened? You know, it would make sense to a certain degree for the Titans. I would see it as a slam dunk. You get a franchise quarterback who can be productive for you for a couple years, solves your quarterback problem. I mean, and for the Chargers, they could get a young QB prospect, but to me, it's a little bit, you know, you don't know where Mariota is going to go, and really, you don't know where either of these two quarterbacks are going to go. They both have a lot of questions, and one question I think is worth asking for this NFL draft and where these guys should be drafted is where does Leonard Williams fall in all this? Leonard Williams, the defensive lineman from USC. You know what you're going to get from a guy like Leonard Williams. He's a physical beast unless he gets injured, and that doesn't seem to be a problem at this point. I would see Leonard Williams as a player that's more ready to be successful in the NFL today, period. And I think he is a much safer option. You know that he is going to be a good player, where Winston, Mariota, I mean, I think both of those players are going to be great in the NFL, but they still have question marks. You know, you look at Winston, is he, you know, mentally strong enough to be a productive quarterback in the NFL? Or is he going to be a Colin Kaepernick type where he can't, you know, he can't get past the first or second read or doesn't say the smartest things in the media? And you look at Mariota, and is he going to be another RG3? Is he going to be another quarterback from a spread, you know, option system that can't cut it in the NFL? You know, that's, you know, big questions to ask. But Leonard Williams doesn't have questions like that floating around him. You know, he's pretty I would say a pretty solid option. But it all boils down to team needs and what the game is today. You know, today's NFL is you need a quarterback, a good quarterback, to win in this league today. You know, you can't go out there anymore and win with a subpar quarterback. It's just not going to happen anymore. And I think that's why all these NFL teams may reach a little bit to go after a quarterback, because they're willing to take a risk on a quarterback, because if they hit it right, then they're golden. Then go after a player that could be an impact player, but in the end, isn't going to get you to the Super Bowl. He can help. He can play a big role. You know, a Leonard Williams could play a big role on a Super Bowl winning team, but he's not going to be the one that wins it for him. All right, we're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk some NBA basketball, talk about the Warriors and Kevin Durant. You know, we're going to talk about the crazy playoff picture in the Eastern Conference, and we'll get to some other stuff. You'll have to tune into the next segment to figure out everything we're going to talk about. This is Sports Talk in the Icebox. You're on radio.dominican.edu. We'll be back right after this 2-minute break. Stay with us.
My name is Dale Pazinski. I'm 19 years old, and this is how I live United. I've always been kind of a computer geek, and I found a way to use those skills to help the homeless in my community. For people facing hard times, computer skills and a basic resume are so important. It may seem like a small thing, but it makes a huge difference in people's lives. So with United Way, I created a program where I work with the homeless. Together, we go through their whole job history, write a resume, and then save it on their very own USB drive. We provide workbooks and training certificates. I even budgeted for cupcakes so we can celebrate as a class when one of our people gets a job. That's huge. When somebody says, "Hey man, that job that you helped me apply for, I got it." That's what Living United feels like to me. My name is Dale Pazinski. I help people achieve financial independence. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live United. Go to liveunited.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Hey, Dr. Phil here. You know, I help people solve difficult problems every day, but one problem has me stumped: childhood hunger. Nearly 16 million children in America struggle with it. Luckily, the Feeding America network of local food banks collects surplus food, giving hope to hungry children and their families. But they need your help. Join me in supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Josh Groban. My favorite thing about music is its ability to inspire and nourish the soul. That's why I'm proud to work with Feeding America, an organization that inspires hope for families in need and helps nourish the 16 million kids in this country struggling with hunger. The Feeding America nationwide network of food banks gathers surplus food and helps get it to kids in need, but they can't do it alone. Find out how you can help at feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Sports Talk in the Icebox. I'm your host, Jeff Safford, coming to you live from Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. More than halfway through the show here on a Wednesday afternoon, approaching 3:45 your local time, 6:45 if you're out in Beantown or somewhere in the wet. On the East Coast. It's been a fun show so far this afternoon. We've talked some Final Four and just got done talking about some NFL news with the draft and just kind of an interesting debate about who should be drafted in the top spot of the NFL draft. And now we're moving on to NBA talk. As the NBA season is kind of coming down to the end. April is kind of, it's almost the NBA's equivalent to March, is when things really start to get serious. The playoff scenarios start to really get thrown around, you know, and just the things really start to get heating up. I mean, look at the playoff scenarios of all the teams at this point. And you look at the Eastern Conference, you got the 7 and 8 seeds within a game of each other. Miami, a half a game ahead of Brooklyn, and Boston, a half a game behind. A half game behind Brooklyn, so a full game behind Miami. So the 7, 8, 9, and Indiana as well is right in the hunt, only a game and a half behind Brooklyn for that 8 spot. So we could see a whole number of things at the bottom. You know, you could see Boston, Indiana. You could see Brooklyn, Miami. You could see Brooklyn and Boston. You could see Miami and Boston. You could, you know, the scenarios, you could go on and on and on of what those last couple of standings are going to be. The rest of the Eastern Conference looks like this. We see Atlanta at the top, who have clinched the conference in the East. They will be the number one seed. And then Cleveland, who is holding the second spot, who has clinched a playoff berth. And Chicago has also clinched a playoff berth, followed by Toronto, who has clinched the division. So has the conference, or will be in the playoffs, followed by Washington at number 5, Milwaukee at 6, then Miami and Brooklyn, who are in there now, but Boston and Indiana are right on their heels. Even Charlotte, you could even include them into the conversation with being 24 games out in total, but only 2 games behind Brooklyn for that final spot in the playoffs. And in the Western Conference, we got the Golden State Warriors sitting at the number one spot. They have also clinched the number one seed for the playoffs, followed by Memphis and Houston, who are a half game apart in the second and third slot. Portland is number 4. Clippers are 5. San Antonio 6. Dallas 7. OKC 8. With the Pelicans a game and a half behind Oklahoma City for that 8th spot. We also know with Oklahoma City that they will not have Kevin Durant for the remainder of the regular season. He will have more surgery. That problem he's had with his foot just has not been improving for the 2014 league MVP. So he will just have to keep trugging along and try to get back for next season. We're going to get to something about him a little bit later in this segment. But you know, looking back to last night, the Warriors and the Clippers faced off. The Warriors were able to defeat Clippers last night. In Staples Center, they are behind in their first half, but were able to come through with a big win last night in Staples Center. And reportedly, there was another spat between Doc Rivers and Steve Kerr, the two coaches. Doc Rivers for the Clippers, Steve Kerr for the Warriors. Another spat between those coaches before the game. And, you know, we're starting to see now that it's very obvious that these two franchises just do not like each other. I mean, there's been multiple altercations and fights of the players on the court. You know, now the coach is getting into it as well. I mean, I think that this rivalry between the LA Clippers and the Warriors is one of the new young budding rivalries. I mean, this is two franchises that are built on a lot of young talent. You know, you got Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan and on the, you know, the young guns for the Clippers, and you got Curry and Thompson and Green. You know, and you got some good veterans on both clubs as well, with Chris Paul for the Clippers and Iguodala on the Warriors. And, you know, the list goes on and on. But, you know, these are two really good teams that play competitive games against each other. They've played against each other in the playoffs, had a lot of battles there as well. And I think it'll be, you know, a possible fun matchup in the playoffs, you know, when these two rival teams will get together. You know, switching gears a little bit. You know, going to think about what's going on in Cleveland. right now, there's that story where LeBron James was reportedly calling plays on the court, and there was some, you know, speculation that Dave Blatt, the coach, was losing control of the team, and Dave Blatt kind of, you know, downrated that, I guess you could say, saying that sometimes in situations where things are too chaotic, the players can all call plays on the court on the fly, and you know, and that's probably true, and that's probably the media and guys like me just trying to blow stories out of proportion, and I think that that's been happening with this Cavalier team all year. You know, every comment that's made, every picture posted on Instagram, like, oh, Kevin Love wasn't in the picture last night posted by LeBron on Instagram, that must mean that they're having problems. It's just like, come on, you know, like, it just seems a little bit, you know, childish to be talking about that type of a thing. And, you know, the fact of the matter is that Cleveland is a playoff contender. And even though the Hawks are number one in the East, you know, most people would probably pick them, the Cavaliers, to win the East over the Hawks. I mean, at least that's my thinking. And, you know, and that isn't that enough? You know, to have success like that, I think it is. And I said I would get back to Kevin Durant earlier in this segment, and I'm going back to him. Kevin Durant made a comment yesterday saying that he would like to finish his career in OKC. Kind of an interesting comment. We haven't heard something like that come from him to this point. And, I mean, obviously, what is he going to say in that situation? Oh, that OKC sucks and I want to leave. You know, that's not something he's going to say. But, you know, I still think that the way he said it is very interesting, and I think it's relevant to think, because at this point, it seems like everyone is just speculating on where KD will go. It's not a speculation of where, if he will stay. You know, I've heard guys even, you know, say that Westbrook, Kevin Love, and Durant are going to all go to Los Angeles, or that KD is going to go back to Washington, D.C. and play for the Wizards because that's where he grew up. And, you know, we've heard all these different scenarios, but why not think of the one that's right in front of him? And if Kevin Durant stays, then you got to believe that Russell Westbrook would probably have a reason to stay in OKC as well. And other players would want to come play with Kevin Durant. I mean, that's just a, you know, just a kind of an obvious thought to think. And it's interesting to see now with the NBA how much clout these star players carry. You know, it has a big impact on where other players want to go as well. I guarantee you that a lot of players that are playing for the Cavaliers right now would not be there if LeBron was not there. It's just, you know, they want to go play with the best, you know, and, you know, the NBA is a much more, you know, individual sport. You need those individual talent star players on your team to really win. And, you know, much less so the NFL or Major League Baseball also. So it's just a little bit different dynamic, and I think it's a little interesting. And one final story on the NBA I thought that was interesting, something to mention, that there will be the first Indian-born basketball player has just signed a 10-day contract in the NBA. The first Indian-born player to ever play in the NBA, and his name is Sim Bular. Signed a 10-day contract with the Kings. He's 7'5". And, like, you know, so a huge guy. And it's interesting that nobody from India has ever played in the NBA before. And now here we're going to see it. So we'll have to see if George Karl can get him out there and see if he can be productive for the King Downs at the stretch. A couple of fun games in the NBA tonight. The Pacers and the Celtics, two teams that are in the mix for the playoffs, play at the Garden tonight. You can see it on NBA TV in just about a half hour. Bulls and Bucks, two, kind of a rivalry matchup going on in Milwaukee, the Mavericks and Thunder. And then the nightcapper will be the Clippers and the Trailblazers, two very good teams. The Trailblazers leading the Clippers by a half, or excuse me, the Clippers are leading the Trailblazers by a game out west in the playoffs for seeding. All right, we get back, like I promised, I'm going to go over some of my favorite looking ballpark foods around, new ballpark food items in Major League Baseball and in the minors as well. So if you like good food, make sure you stay tuned to the next segment here on Sports Talk in the Icebox here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. We'll be right back.
In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in physics, I learned that I'm a loser.
Today in school, I learned that I'm ugly and useless. And in gym, I learned that I'm pathetic and a joke. In history, I learned that I'm trash.
Today in school, I learned that I have no friends. In English, I learned that I make people sick. And at lunch, I learned that I sit on my own because I smell. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes
me. In biology, I learned that I'm fat and stupid. And in math, I learned that I'm trash.
The only thing I didn't learn in school today.
The only thing I didn't learn today.
The only thing I didn't learn
is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
All right, welcome back to the show. We're on Sports Talk in the Icebox here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. Only have a few minutes left of the show here this afternoon, but don't worry. We have more radio content coming up for you here on Penguin Radio. Ball is Life is coming up in just a few minutes after I end my show with DJ Smooth and DJ Roughhouse. Sure, they will get into a lot of great basketball talk for you, as they do every week here on Penguin Radio. All right, to wrap up our show this afternoon, just going to go and talk about it with opening day coming up. I'm sure there will be a lot more baseball talk in our show next week. Opening day coming up next week, figured, you know, what's baseball without food? You got to, you know, if you're going to a Giants game, you got to go get some, garlic fries, or you got to go to, you know, the Willie Mays, what do they call it? Doggy Diner, or one of those places you got to go get a sausage or a Sheboygan brat or, you got to get something good. What's kind of become a new trend in baseball and football, too, is a lot of these places are coming up with new, you know, kind of, I guess you could call them trendy or more culinary advanced ideas for ballpark food, and I found a couple that I think sound the most interesting or the best. We're going to start with the Wilmington Blue Rocks, a team in AA. They have come out with a Krispy Kreme donut hot dog, which is a hot dog kind of wrapped in a glazed donut bun with bacon on the top and a hot dog. This is kind of a interesting item because I think it mixes kind of, you got kind of sweet, you got savory with the bait, with the meat, the hot dog, and you also got a little smoky flavor with the bacon on top as well. And of course the Midwest is going to be representing this list, because anything fried or that has cheese with it, it's going to be eaten in the Midwest. So they're definitely going to be bringing their A game with food. And they have, the Milwaukee Brewers will be bringing out an item called deep fried nachos on a stick. Yeah, that's right. Deep fried nachos on a stick, where they're going to take chips and break them up into little pieces. And that's going to be like a crust on the outside. And inside is going to be kind of nacho goodies. You know, you're going to find maybe some beans or some queso or jalapenos in there. And they're also going to top it with some cheese and a little crema fresca on top as well. That sounds pretty ridiculous. You got, and also in Minnesota, I thought this was a very interesting idea. They're bringing a pepperoni pizza Bloody Mary to the mix. So if you want to get a cocktail, it's literally pepperoni pizza in a Bloody Mary. It's kind of a weird mix, and they serve a little sausage link with it as well. So talk about some good, you know, they're always sticking stuff in Bloody Marys. You know, they got celery in there, you got peppers and olives, you know, why not stick a piece of pizza in there too? Kind of interesting. My favorite item that I've seen so far has got to be chicken and waffle cones. Now what they've done is they've taken, you know, fried the chicken and waffle idea. You know, so they take pieces of fried chicken, and they get some potatoes kind of ladled in with the chicken, kind of, you know, mashed potatoes, and they all put it inside of a waffle cone. So you get that waffle flavor from, you know, from the waffle cone to go along with the chicken. So you got, I think it's a pretty interesting idea. You know, I think it's a pretty smart idea. And I said before that I'm going to mention one item that maybe doesn't come up to par as a creative food item, and that item who I feel fails miserably is the Phillies ballpark food, which is the Wayback Triple Burger, which is literally just a cheeseburger with 9 patties and 9 pieces of cheese. Come on, guys. Like, you can't be a little bit more creative than that. You got guys making nachos on a stick and chicken and waffles and a waffle cone, and you're going to make a 9x9 burger? We've seen that before. Come on, guys. Whatever you decide to eat at the ballpark this year, whether it's a, you know, a 9-foot-long Sheboygan brat or a, you know, whatever it seems to be, I'm sure it'll be tasty. But those are some of the interesting ballpark food items that are out there on the market today. All right, we are done here on Sports Talk in the Icebox. Ball is Life is coming up in just a few minutes. Thank you for listening. Signing off, I'm Jeff Safford. Tune in next Wednesday, and have a great afternoon, everybody.